Again, as usual, over the last day or so, I was given a couple of suggestions for a talk this evening, and I'm going to roll them all together under a title which relates to a question I was asked at the retreat last week, which I was conducting in Jhana Grove, and also which I was asked while I was giving a talk in Melbourne on a Sunday evening last week. And that was, what is actually the Buddhist definition of right view? Now, first of all, every religion has a right view, and they all think that their right view is the correct one, and everyone else's view is the wrong one. And you know what happens, then religions just become like husbands and wives, always arguing, always wondering who's right and who's wrong. And that's something wrong with that type of view. And we might say Buddhist right view, you may hear Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, blah, 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 impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self. But there must be something more interesting and useful than that. And I'm basing this talk, and I'm going to be bringing in many, many examples, which will include some of the subjects people asked me to talk about. There was one very wonderful little teaching which the Buddha gave on what is right view, what is the teachings of the Buddha, when he said, whatever teachings lead to a state of peace, stillness, lead to harmony, which lead to disappearing of these problems of life, which lead to these things ceasing, which lead to enlightenment, which lead to nirvana. So those are the teachings of the Buddhism. That's the right view. And it was a little example which said that you can know what the correct view, what right view is, not by, you know, whether it is in accordance with some sutra or some textual authority, but by actually what it does in your life and in other people's life and in society. You can understand what is correct view by its effect. And it's wonderful that was a teaching which can cut across people arguing that certain ideas and opinions are actually what is right for you. And instead it's actually, what does it do? Does that create peace and harmony in your world? Or does it create the opposite? And it's also that in our tradition they say that once you have the right view, once you get that sort of quite clear in your head, then the other things, you know, you can see by just even your intentions become quite pure. You know, because if you've got wrong view, your intentions start to go all wrong. Right. Always emphasize in meditation and the rest of life, you know, the three right intentions of the Buddha, which is the intention to let go, the intention to be kind, the intention to be gentle. That is straight down the line, second factor of the Eightfold Path. I'm just saying that to give this talk some authority, because sometimes people say on a Friday night, Ajahn Brahm just teaches pop Buddhism, he makes it up for himself, it's got nothing to do with what the Buddha actually taught, and sometimes you have to sort of justify that. These are actually pretty much straight down the line teachings from the Buddha. So straight away, that whatever view creates these beautiful intentions of letting go, of being kind and being gentle, that is actually what we mean by right view leading to right intentions. It's actually what these things create. And I first thing I'm going to say, because I have to say this, I was reading in the newspapers and also on the internet, I'm a bit ashamed that there are right now Buddhist monks in Burma and in Sri Lanka doing terrible things like destroying mosques and chasing Muslims out of their homes and even killing. And I'm not sure if you've seen that, but that disgusts me. And I know that sometimes people say, well, when there's problems like this, why don't you do something and say something? So I'm saying something that has nothing to do with the teaching of the Buddha. And any sort of Buddhist lay person, let alone monks, who support such gross actions should be totally ashamed of themselves, and they know that that is not the Buddhist teachings. You should actually, if you're going to be violent, don't be a Buddhist, because the two don't go together. I don't mind saying that, and it's really gross. Even 2 centuries after the Buddha, there was a very famous emperor of India called Asoka, you know, who was a Buddhist, and he was wise enough as a leader, as an authority figure. He actually wrote in stone. We know this is here because this is there to this day. He's one of the quotes which he wrote down, that anyone who even criticizes another person's religion, even criticizes, let alone destroying people's temples of worship, just criticizing another person's religion, only succeeds in demeaning his own faith or her own faith. And anyone who destroys another person's temple, they're just destroying their own religion, taking away its credibility, taking away its meaning. Spirituality, religion should always be about peace, kindness, harmony. As I was saying, that's what right view is. Whatever creates those sorts of things is right view. And obviously, you know, we try to actually to encourage. One of the reasons why that happens, and I'm just going on this, it was only be a short while on this particular topic, but it needs to be addressed. One of the reasons is that in some parts of Asia, number one, we have the hierarchies, and so monks and nuns, they're up there in the top of the hierarchy. We always believe what they say, or if they say it must be true, without questioning. So please, even if it's a monk or a nun, you must always question, because sometimes you know this is wrong, but because it's a monk, you let them do it. No, you know this is wrong, and you should take away the support, or even call in the police and arrest them if they're destroying other people's property. That is not Buddhism. That is against our rules, should not happen. So don't be afraid of monks. That type of superstition, you know, was what happened, say, please excuse me, in the Catholic Church, when people were so overly respectful of the Catholic clergy and so afraid of their authority, they let a lot of abuse happen. And obviously we never ever want such a thing to happen in Buddhism. It obscures these beautiful teachings. So please have that right view that, you know, yes, I know I'm up here teaching, but I'm up here because you can see me, not because you're superior. So please make sure that, you know, you always understand the right view is to question everybody and not take any teachings or any actions just on faith when they obviously, they can't be right, they must be wrong. Even at the view on what is right and wrong in life, a lot of times people ask me this question, how can you, when you've got a difficult decision to make in life, how do you know whether this is the right path to go or not? And a lot of times, yeah, you can have theories, you can say 5 precepts, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. But you know, the best way of finding out that is actually be enough, have enough awareness to find out in your own heart, you know, whether that feels right, whether it feels wrong. So often in life, you know it feels wrong. And you can even trust that. You know, usually that is a much better indicator of ethical truth than anything else. Because people can actually read these things in the book. They can twist them around like they always do. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, when I first went to Thailand and people were catching fish. And I was saying, you're breaking your 5 precepts, you're killing fish, even though they needed it to, you know, to eat, to feed their families. But at least, you know, you should not think you're keeping the 5 precepts. And this is how people twist things around and say, no, we're not killing the fish, we just take them out of the water and they die by themselves. And you can see just how people can very easily twist things around, if it's just through words and sort of documents and legal systems. But when you feel it inside here, you know it's wrong. I was just talking to someone again last week. In my whole life, actually since I was born, I've only deliberately killed a reasonably sized animal once, which was a mouse. My father had just died. There was a mouse running around our apartment, and I was just trying to sort of, you know, be the man of the house for my mother. So I brought a trap from the hardware store, set it, and I caught that mouse. And it went bang and it broke that mouse's neck. And I took that trap, and as I took it to the waste bin to throw it away, and I was actually stroking that little being. And it was a beautiful being. It had such soft fur. And I felt terrible that I'd actually killed a living being. And it wasn't hard to actually to have that sensitivity in here to say, no, this is wrong, you should never do this again. And so that was the only one animal which I actually did. I did kill, you know, on purpose. I never did it again. You feel in here, this is not right. You can't do this. And even, of course, you know that other time, which I'm quite proud of, the time when I had a choice in a meeting of a big monastery, where I could say, you know, basically denounce the status of the bhikkhunis, and then I could stay with my monastery, or say, no, bhikkhunis, they are real bhikkhunis, they're fully ordained nuns. I remember that moment, because you had a choice, it was a very big choice to make. I'd have to sacrifice a lot of friends. But you know, I felt in here, you know, what is right, what is wrong? It's obvious what is right, actually, to stick to the truth, no matter what the consequences were. You know in here what is right. So what actually is right view is being aware and mindful enough inside of you. Now this thing we call intuition, or whatever it is else you want to call it, the inner wisdom, you know what's ethically right or ethically wrong. And you know, just demeaning another person's faith is not the way to create peace and harmony in this world, let alone destroying their property and chasing them out because they're not the same religion as you, or the same part of that religion as you. There's a very famous story, which is, it's a bit of a joke. I read it in a joke book, but it was, I get a lot of wisdom from joke books, by the way. That's why they're funny, because they're telling the truth. And it was, this man was walking home late one day. It was, I'm telling you, as I read it, as a Christian story. And he saw a man on the bridge about to jump off and commit suicide. And the walker passerby said, hey, what are you doing? He said, leave me alone. If you come any closer, I'll jump. He said, oh, by your accent, it looks like, you know, you come from England. And the guy said, yeah, I am English. He said, I'm English too. What a coincidence. What part of England do you come from? And he said, I come from Yorkshire. Me too. What a coincidence that is. And then he asked, he said, what religion are you? He said, I'm a Christian. Me too, I'm a Christian. What type of Christian? He said, I said, I'm a Baptist. Wow, this is amazing. I'm a Baptist too, said the passerby. What type of Baptist? You know, Southern Baptist or Northern Baptist? And he said, I'm a Southern Baptist. What about you? Me too, I'm a Southern Baptist. Those Northerners, they don't know what they're talking about. Are you Southern Baptist 1924 Reformed or the other lot? And he said, I'm 1924 Reformed. You bastard, jump, I'm the other lot. And that's actually what happens. Sometimes the closer you are, the more arguments you have, even between your religions. Now this is a problem with us. How on earth can we have some peace? This is not right view. Dividing everybody, even into sects, even in Buddhism. It's terrible. You know, we have Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana. Which is the right one? Which is the best? And even in Theravada Buddhism, we have Sri Lankans, we have Thais. Which is the best? And even in Sri Lanka, how many sects do you have in your Buddhism in Sri Lanka? I've asked even monks that. They don't know because there's too many of them. Why can't we get together, for goodness sake, and have some peace and harmony? Right view is what creates harmony. And look, if we can't have harmony within our own religion, how can we have harmony with other religions? And are we going to have all this terrible violence in our world? That has nothing to do with wisdom. Remember what wisdom does? It does lead to peace, harmony. It leads to these beautiful three right intentions. The ability to let go. I let go that, you know, some people eat pork, some people eat vegetarian, some people eat something else. Anyway, you know, even if you do eat cow, as someone said last week, it's just processed grass. Processed grass, yeah, you know, you get it. And even, I got one of my monks who keeps on telling me you should eat more fruit and you won't get so fat. But I told him, elephants, that's all they eat is fruit. And they're pretty fat. So, but when we can actually just have a bit of letting go of our views and preferences, so we can have peace with other people, then that becomes a little bit of right view. So whenever there is disharmony and even violence, is something very wrong, that is certainly never anything to do with Buddhism. One of the problems is, of course, is this happens with human beings. We have our nationalism, our tribalism. I am an Eagle supporter, you are a Dockers supporter. You know, this is the two big football teams in Perth. Okay, that's all right, just having a bit of fun on the soccer field or whether on the stands. But when it comes home, please don't go into any fights over that. And sometimes this is one of the problems as well. Sometimes people say a country can be religious, that a country is Buddhist, or a country, a nation is a Muslim. Countries aren't religious, people are. There's no such thing as a Buddhist country, there's no such thing as a Christian country, there's no such thing as a Muslim republic. People are religious, not countries. We can have that, maybe we will have some harmony and peace between people. So when it's right view, we find we can have some harmony and peace. You know, one of the ways of doing that, just a practical way, and because sometimes people say, this is great theory, but you know, it makes a lot of sense, but why is there so much violence in our world? And somebody was saying, they just saw on the news before they came, there's so many problems in this world, so many violence and bad things happening. Yeah, we can all say it's bad, but can't we do something about it? And one way of doing something about it, which I love teaching again and again, one day it might get heard by somebody in government and actually put into practice, for goodness sake, let's do away with all religious schools, which actually divide society. There are some people who go to Jewish primary school, Jewish secondary school, Jewish university, they marry a Jewish person, they spend all their time with other Jewish people, they don't really get to make friends across their divide. I just say that with Jewish, that's the same as Muslim, Christian, Catholic or whatever. Fortunately, we don't have any Buddhist school in Australia. People suggested that, I've vetoed it, whatever power I have. Because I don't want us to go down that same path. I want a person to be able to go to school, you know, with a Muslim, with a Christian, with a Buddhist, a Hindu, atheist, a whole lot, make their friends across that divide, which means that we can have a harmonious, integrated society. So if there's anyone in government ever listening to this, and a few actually senators actually do listen to these talks on a Friday night, I've been told, please, can't we do away? Yeah, it's a tough thing to do, but what a wonderful world this would be. You know, if your kid's best friend, you know, you're a Buddhist, your kid's best friend was a Muslim, and they go out together on a night and whatever, and they have fun together. What a wonderful world that would be when we could integrate, and then all these suspicions which we have against each other will never actually come to such extremes of violence and destroying each other people's property. So that's maybe one thing we can possibly do. And of course, you know, which religion is the right religion? Whichever religion produces peace, harmony, freedom, the beautiful sense of love. That's the right religion. And if you think you're a Buddhist and you're creating violence, that is not the right religion. Don't care who you are, even if you're wearing brown robes. You've got it wrong. That is not what the Buddha would ever teach or preach or support. But we do see these things, but we have to also keep it in perspective. Because sometimes that when we have so many problems in our world, that's all we ever see. And this is the next simile. This is one of my favorite similes. I probably said it 2 weeks ago, but I can't remember. I'm getting old now, but it's a brilliant one. How big is my hand? How big is my hand? My hand is now so big I can't see any of you. All I can see in the whole world is my hand. Is it my hand's fault? Is that the problem or is it my perspective? Of course it's my perspective. When I hold my hand where it belongs, at the end of my arm, the hand is still there. It hasn't got smaller, it's exactly the same size, but now I've got perspective, I can see my hand, but I can also see every one of you as well. This is one of the problems with the perspective which causes the problems in our world, is because sometimes we hold something so close to us, we can't see anything else, we've lost our perspective, that means we get very, very deceived and deluded. So if you do watch the news one evening, yeah, there's a few things coming on the TV which are really bad. Look, don't hold it so close. Put it down there. Yeah, there's some bad things happening in the world. There's also some beautiful things which happen in the world as well. Which is why I don't usually see the TV, but I do read newspapers. And I must confess, and this is honest truth, when I get a newspaper, the first place I turn to is the comics. You know, to put some positive vibes into you, and then you can see the other things which go on in the world. But the comics are the very best. And of course, they're also, you know, very funny, but also they have a message in them as well. And so when you put the hand out in its proper place, then you don't get so upset. Another thing about right view, because somebody asked me, there was another program they said on TV, about organ donation. And how, apparently there was a program on TV where in Spain they said, there's not any dialysis centers for people with kidney disease. And the reason is because in the country of Spain they have so many donors that people with a bad kidney, a dodgy kidney, can get a donated organ so easily. But here in Australia, I think if I remember those figures, there's only 350 organs donated each year and 10,000 people need them. And so as a Buddhist, I say, look, there's nothing wrong with being an organ donor. I am an organ. I carry a card around with me. And I'm not afraid of, I'm happy to donate all of my organs, any organs you want. Even that very special organ, you know, which, you know, is a bit rude to say, but that hasn't been used for such a long time. That would be a wonderful organ. To donate. You can have whatever you want, basically. But why are people afraid of doing that? Number one, some religions, even some Buddhist traditions, say if you give your eye to somebody who needs it, when you go to heaven, you only have one eye. That's absolutely crazy stuff. You should know, if you feel right inside, when you give something, have you given something to someone? How do you feel whenever you give something which somebody really, really needs? When you share, when you give some food, when you give a donation, when you just give someone a lift, when you just give someone time, how do you feel? It always makes you happy. It's good karma, it's love, it's charity. In all religions, we know that's a great thing to do. It's good karma. Of course it's a wonderful thing to do. So you don't have to be afraid that you're going to lose out somehow. If you give a kidney, a heart, or whatever you want. You don't need it anymore when you're dead. People who think, oh, you know, when you die, however you die, that's how you'll be resurrected. That's a terrible idea. If that was the case, I'd make sure I died when I was young, fit, and a lot thinner than I am now. So you can enjoy your old heaven or whatever else happens to you when you die. But so much superstition goes on with the dying process. So they also say that, well, sometimes you have to take those organs. I heard this some time ago. You have to take the organs when you're not quite dead yet. Because if you really are dead, then the organs, you know, they probably have already packed up and they can't really be used. They're not fresh enough. So it's just, you know, maybe, I don't know, 5-10 minutes before death. But the death process has already happened then. By that time, you're probably already out of your body, floating up, and say, please take the organ. Take this one over here. This is a really, really good one. Thinking that to the doctor. And how about my liver? Can you please make use of that? Whatever it is. Again, a monk's liver. Imagine a monk. We haven't had any alcohol for I don't know how many years. Our livers are pristine. But anyway, you can take whatever you want, because you're so happy. If I was dying, and I'd be so happy that my organs can help other people, live a good life. I've been to dialysis centers, and I've gone and sort of talked to people. Part of your job as a monk to try and encourage, give blessings to people, whatever it is, to try and support them. I've been to dialysis centers. If any of you want to sort of thinking about giving an organ, go to a dialysis center. Go and visit them and see just the, it's not the agony in there, but just the discomfort having to spend so many hours, I think 2 or 3 hours a session, maybe 3 times a week or something. These people have to go there, and just because some people are just so stupid that they die and they won't give their organs to these people. And it's a tragedy. And it's something we can do with a little bit of kindness and compassion, you know, to help our world. And you don't lose out of this. And if they do harvest your organs just before you die, you won't feel any pain or discomfort. You feel this beautiful sense of kindness. If you do feel any pain or discomfort, it's the same pain or discomfort, that level, if you go see a doctor and you have an injection or you have a sort of go to the dentist, and that's always a little bit uncomfortable, but the pain is hardly anything at all. So you don't need to worry about that. And anyway, you're dying and you're making that extra good karma at the end. Isn't it wonderful? Have you all got enough good karma? Are you all sure you're going to go to a nice place, get a good rebirth afterwards? Why not bump it up at the very end just to make sure? You've got nothing to lose. It's a no-brainer. Actually, if you have got a brain, donate that as well. So I really encourage, you know, everybody, especially if you're a Buddhist, please become an organ donor. Tell your family, tell your friends. And if your friends are Christians or whatever and they say, no, sort of, you know, we want sort of, you know, you to be buried intact or something, say, look, I'm a Buddhist, I'm going to hell anyway, so you don't have to worry about me. That's what they think or whatever. So just give those organs to someone who really needs them. And even, there's, you know, sometimes you say, you know, monks who destroy mosques, but there was a story some years ago, and many of you here will know this monk. I won't say his name. He became quite well known and famous because he was a blood donor. And so as a blood donor, that's why I became an organ donor. They take the type of your blood and say, well, if we got a match, you know, we'll ask if you've got a spare organ as well when you're still alive. And so this monk in Sri Lanka, they found he had a match. There was a person who desperately needed a kidney, and this monk had the match. So they're matched up together, and of course the doctors have to ask you, this is a match, your kidney will fit into this guy whose kidneys are all gone, he's in big trouble, will you donate your kidney? And the monk, you know, still, I think, was in his 30s or 40s or something, still quite young, and he said, yeah, sure, no worries, but they said, look, there's a problem. So what's the problem? And he said, you're a Buddhist, this man who wants your kidneys is an evangelical Christian going around Sri Lanka and converting Buddhists to being Christians. Are you still okay with this? And the monk said, what do you mean? No problem at all. He can have my kidney. And it's a wonderful thing. It's like someone in the West Coast Eagles donating their boots, you know, to the doctors or something. But he said, no, of course you can. And so he had the operation. They took a kidney out and it was put inside an evangelical Christian in that country, basically the opposition. What a wonderful thing that was, and how inspiring. Now that is Buddhism, that is Christianity, that is Islam, that is spirituality, that is giving, kindness, non-judgmental. What a beautiful and inspiring thing that is. And it's nice to talk about inspiring stories, not about monks destroying mosques, but monks giving their kidneys to Muslims or whatever. What a beautiful thing that is. There is inspiration in our world as well. So don't just focus on the problems. Put it out here. And actually you find the beautiful acts in our world are far greater than the miserable acts. I've been around. Yeah, I live in a monastery, but I get out and about. There's more kind people in this world than are the angry people. There's more people who will help you than there are people who will hurt you, which is, you know, a great way of looking in our world. There's all, for every 2 bad bricks in the wall, there's always 1,000 good bricks. That's the experience of life. So don't get so depressed. Don't get so afraid. Don't get so depressed thinking when you look at the news, that's all you ever see. That is wrong view. That's only looking at a part of life. Looking just ahead, and that's all you see. Put it where it belongs, at the end of your arm, and then it is fine. The other thing which I wanted to say, because this comes up again and again and again and again, and people keep ringing me up, the Dial a Monk service, when you have problems with your marriage, when things go wrong in the marriage and relationship. And sometimes, you know, because we try and make ourselves contactable, so people can ring up the monastery and get through to myself or another monk. But look, have the right view when you start a relationship. And that right view is, you know, just as said, it's impermanent. Whenever relationships start, one day they must end. They have to end. Sometimes they end early. You know, you've just been going out for a few years or a few weeks and they end. Sometimes you last for life, but even then they end when somebody dies. Please remember from the time you first go out together, especially when you get married, that this is a temporary relationship. Yeah, it sounds romantic. This is a marriage made in heaven. We'll be married forever. Even I did one marriage once, you know, over in, where was it? Somewhere, some place, restaurant over in the Far East. Where was it? Mandaring or somewhere. But anyway, there's a couple of Buddhists. That's the Far East for me, Mandaring and anywhere beyond. And they were both Buddhists. They were Tibetan Buddhists. And so they said in their marriage vows, we're committing not just for this life, for the next three or four lives. They realized what they were letting themselves in for. Imagine that. You know, you know, in Thai Buddhism, they have this tradition. That if you offer things together to a monk, like, you know, you have a bowl of rice or some curry or something, and you offer it together, you know, the husband and the wife offering it together, that means you will be reborn again in your next life and get married in your next life as well. Because what good karma you make together in this life, you get back in your next life. So I was mentioning that to this one couple, this Thai girl and this Australian man. They've been married for quite a while. I said, oh, you know, if you offer things together, you'll be married again in the next life. Straight away, the Australian took his hand away. No. One lifetime is enough. He couldn't get his hands away quick enough. But anyhow, you understand that the marriages, relationships will always end. And the problem comes is if we don't know that to begin with, number one, they end faster. And the reason is an obvious reason. If we think they're going to last forever, we don't put any effort into keeping the relationship going. We take the relationship for granted. That's our problem. The old simile is Ajahn Chah would hold up a glass and he'd say, can you see the crack in the glass? And I would look, that's a perfectly good glass. There is no crack in it. And Ajahn Chah was cracked, not the glass. And he said, no, there's a crack in it, but it is microscopic, he said. That's why you can't see it. But one day someone's going to drop this glass or they knock it, and that crack is going to open up, the glass is going to break. It's glass. It's its nature. It's never going to last forever. But he said, if this was a plastic glass, now then you could kick it, you could drop it, you do whatever you wanted with it because it's unbreakable, it's going to last forever. That's the difference between a real glass and a plastic glass. He says all relationships are glass. They've got a crack in it. One day it's going to break. And because you know that one day it's going to break, that is why you look after it and care for it. If this was a very valuable piece of glass, some like Waterford crystal or something, then I'd be so careful with this. I still remember once, as an old anecdote, I went to a girlfriend's house in Devon, and her father, it's okay, it's not a slip. No, she wasn't married. Her father. I went to the girlfriend's house in Devon. Her father was a collector of antique pottery. And because I was her boyfriend, he got out this vase and he handed it to me. And he said, that is over 2,000 years old. It's worth a couple of £100,000. And I wish he hadn't said that because I had this priceless piece of ancient pottery in my hand. And I couldn't get rid of it quick enough. Please take it before I drop it. I was so afraid of dropping it. anything which is very, very, very valuable, of course you care for it, you look after it. Only when you realize it could be broken very easily. So when you realize that relationships are impermanent, they're like glass, they've got a crack in it, they can finish very easily, that is why you look after it. And you care for it. You put effort into it because you know this is just because you say we're going to get married, we're going to live together, I'm going to love you forever, darling. Yeah, of course, everyone says that. But don't believe that. The relationship is fragile, which means you really got to care for it, put effort into it. And then when it does break in the end, someone will one day sort of break that glass. And say, yeah, I expected that, it's going to happen. Which means at the end of the relationship, you don't have this terrible surprise. Why did he do that? He'd run out. Why did she do that? You don't get surprised. This is nature, for goodness sake. It happens to so many other couples, and you think it doesn't happen to you, that you're somehow special, that you've got this special, unique relationship. Not like other people. My relationship is special. Yeah, sure. We like to think that, don't we? That's called conceit. But when we realize that our relationships, like others, is fragile, we put more effort into looking after it, caring for each other. And how do we do that, right view? Letting go. Remember, letting go, being kind, being gentle, the three right intentions. Can't we do that in our relationship? Yeah, your husband said something stupid, he called you a pig. Now let it go. You know, you called him a dog. Fair's fair. Let it go. But how many of you just keep holding it on year after year after year? One way of letting go. And I'm saying this because on the weekend we're having a New Year celebration. We have the Western New Year when people usually get drunk. That's a bit stupid. But it's actually the Indian New Year. And that Indian New Year is celebrated in Sri Lanka, in Burma, in Thailand, Cambodia, Bangladesh too. So it's like the Indian New Year, not the Chinese New Year. And so we're having a celebration because many of those countries are Buddhist and so on. Sunday we're having the New Year celebration. And one of the things they always do on that day is do a forgiveness ceremony. We're just talking about the Cambodians also have that. And you know what they do in this Cambodian and some of the Thai monasteries in the north? People bring a little bag of sand to the monastery on that day. And the reason they bring a bag of sand is they say, well, we've been coming into this monastery all year. And when we actually walk away, some of the soil of the monastery sticks to our sandals and our shoes. And we take it away. So we stole all of this. So now we're bringing back what we've taken from the temple. It's a bit cute. We always say building sand, please, so we can use it for, you know, making a hut or something. But it's like a very cute thing of saying, on that day, we want to sort of make sure we have no debts, we have no bad feelings. So always a forgiveness ceremony. That's where the water comes from. You know, the water washes away the past. You know, these days in Thailand, they just hold buckets over people, which shows how bad things they've done in the past. You need that much water to wash it all away. But what we really mean is that we say forgiveness to each other. And every marriage I do these days, and I did one just a week or two ago here, every marriage which I sort of conduct, I always make those two people having a relationship together, really starting to get serious, to have a forgiveness ceremony every anniversary. So I told the two of them, okay, now this is one thing I want you to promise me to do. On the anniversary of your marriage, just get a little gift, a token, nothing really expensive, just some little token gift. Present it to your partner and tell them, if there's anything which I have done by body, by speech or mind, which may have hurt you, either on purpose, I'm a human, sometimes I get upset, or more likely just by accident, unintentional, I've hurt you, or things which I didn't do, which I should have done, I ask forgiveness. I'm sorry. I'm a human being. You know, I really want this relationship to carry on. I love you. This is, you know, my partner. Please forgive me. And if anyone asks forgiveness with sincerity, in this Buddhist tradition, no matter what a person's done, if they ask forgiveness with sincerity, you have to give it. You can't say no. You have to forgive when they're asked. It's a beautiful little ceremony. And then the other person does the same. If anything which I have done, by body, now some act, by speech, stupid words, or even thoughts, which may have hurt you or irritated you, either on purpose or just by accident, unintentionally, or again, things I didn't do which I should have done. I'm sorry, I ask forgiveness. Please forgive me. And you do give that forgiveness. So once a year, on your anniversary, or what they do on Sunday, we always really let go. Let go of the past with a forgiveness ceremony. Such a beautiful thing to do. Or, if in the last 12 months, this is not in a relationship, you know, you say you had an abortion, or you've done something very bad, you cheated on somebody, come up to a Buddha statue and just do that little forgiveness ceremony. And if you're really hurting because of it, say, look, whatever I've done over the past 12 months, body, speech or mind, intentional or unintentional, between a rock and a hard place, I just didn't really have much of a choice, but I feel bad about it anyway. Please forgive me. And let it go. What a beautiful right view that is, to let go of the pain of the past, instead of carrying it around with us. It does give us the cancers, it does give us the depressions, it stops us enjoying life, having a good relationship, being happy, the whole works. So the forgiveness is a very important part of right view. It's called letting go. Being kind. I don't know how many times you sort of keep pushing on the kindness, and I will keep pushing on the kindness every week until you're kind enough, you know, to let people go and forgive them. Okay, you've had a relationship, it's ended. Please be kind. This is the most important time to be kind, not be blaming. I don't know how many people, a lot of times, yeah, you know, on the outside you blame your partner, that guy, what he did, that girl, she's just so selfish, she's so sort of up herself, and that fellow, he never does anything for anybody else, he's so conceited. Stop blaming other people. They're just human beings, they're not perfect, what do you expect? But worst of all, people, not just women, men as well, when they go through these separations, they blame themselves. They get into such a big guilt trip. Oh, I should not have done that, I should have come home early, I should have been kind, or I should have spoken more, rah, rah, rah. And sometimes we blame ourselves as well. And that creates such the pain. Really the separation when somebody, a relationship finishes. And it's like a death. Why is it that we can't celebrate the life when somebody dies, which a lot of people do these days? Why can't we celebrate the time we've had together? Celebrate the relationship rather than mourning the death of our partnership. You know, it's amazing that over the last 20, 30 years, that has become the modern way to perform funeral services. No more crying, no more wearing black and beating your breast and tearing your hair out and all this other sort of stuff which people get into sometimes at funeral services. It is a celebrating a life. You go there and you hear all the tales of what that person did, some of the stupid things they did. I remember one funeral service and his best mate, the guy who died, said how he blew up a toilet on a construction site when he was about 14 years of age. He made some sort of bomb and blew the whole thing up. Just kids being kids, okay? And you know, it made the whole thing human. You were celebrating a wonderful life of all the stupid and wonderful things a person did in their life. We do that now at funeral services. Can't we do that at a divorce as well? Have a divorce, come together, and celebrate all the wonderful times you had together. It's over now. Just the karma is all gone. Wouldn't it be a radical thing to do? Why not? Celebrate the end of the relationship. We had a wonderful time together. Yeah, it's finished now. We have to move on. Can't we celebrate the wonderful time we've had together? I like saying things which other people don't say. Because it just gives you another doorway to go through. So we don't have all this pain when people separate. Some of those pains, I'm saying this also because they cause me pain by calling me up at all times. And it just, geez, I get very concerned when it's a relationship breakup, because that's a long telephone call. So we can do this, and this is actually part of letting go and being kind to yourself. Yeah, you know, you did your very best. You're not perfect. You could have done better. You can always do better. I can always tell better jokes. And actually, can I tell any better jokes? Well, probably they're the peak of jokes. No, you can always be kind and more forgiving. So this is the best way. And we remember this is part of life. The cup breaks. That's the right view. A lot of times people say, oh no, if you think it's going to last forever, then you're being positive and then you're going to make it last. If you think it's going to break, it will break. That's not how the psychology works. If you think it's going to break, you look after it. You care for it. That's why when you remember the relationships are fragile, life is fragile, that is right view. You know you're going to die. Relationships don't last forever. You know that as truth. Admit it. Face up to it. You don't need to be afraid, because that will actually save many relationships. You put more effort and care into it. This is valuable, and relationships can be a great deal of happiness. They're valuable for you. Please care for it. Care for it like one of your most priceless possessions. You will not drop it. You will not knock it. It's important for you. And then it lasts a long time. When it does bust up, you've given it your best. It's part of life. So you don't blame anybody. You don't feel guilty. You don't get angry, for goodness sake. You don't think that somehow there's something wrong with you. It's bust up. You, like everybody else. So these are just ways of understanding what this thing called right view is. And the reason why it is called right view, remember, this is not theory. I'm not telling you what to believe in. I'm telling you what works. Sometimes people think right view is believing in something. Believe in some philosophy, some God, some Buddha, or Four Noble Truths, whatever. It's actually what works. And you know it works. And funnily enough, when I give talks overseas, I'm probably here as well, you get people of all different religions coming along. I was very happy giving talks in Indonesia last March, because it wasn't just Muslims coming along to listen to my talk. They were helping sell my books on the bookstore. Just working with all these Buddhists, and you wouldn't know who was who, laughing and having a great time. That's the world I want to create and live in. No, because teachings which create peace, which create understanding, which is that a Buddhist teaching that glasses will break, and if you look after them, they'll last longer? And when they do break, you know, well, I looked after it as part of life. Is that a Buddhist teaching, or a Muslim teaching, or a Christian teaching, or a Hindu teaching, or a Baha'i teaching, or a Jew teaching, or an atheist teaching? I don't know. It's just truth, isn't it? It happens. It's common sense. That is why real right view, organ donation, is common sense. Why is something you don't need, why can't you give it to someone who really needs it more than you? Really needs it. Why can't you do that? It's obvious, it's common sense, that is right view. I don't care if you're Muslim or Christian or whatever, if you've got a kidney, which you know, someone else can use, you know, a God, an Allah or whatever, aren't they kind, loving, beautiful people? Surely they will say, what a wonderful thing you've done. Shown mercy, shown love, shown kindness, that you've given something you can no longer use to someone and create a beautiful life for them. And if you see people who have received organs so they can go on with their life, having a family, kids, living their life, whatever they're doing, they're so grateful. What a beautiful gift that is. You're giving them life. What greater gift can that be? So don't miss the opportunity. If you haven't signed up yet as an organ donor, next time you renew your car license or whatever, put it down there. Tell your family and friends. Tell them that you're a Buddhist and you know, you're not going to go to heaven. You're going to get reincarnated again. You get a much better body next time. Because you know what you give to others, you get back twofold. You'll probably have three eyes next time if you give an eye. Even more wise. The third eye is, you know, your wisdom eye inside. So please be kind. Please be generous. Please let go. And share. Those are the Buddhist three right intentions. This is what happens when you have right view. And so when people ask me right view, I don't usually say Four Noble Truths, this theory, that theory. You can read that in the book. That is right view according to the books. But the right view which I said here is a right view which goes across all religions, all faiths, all no faiths, every culture. It creates a global peace and harmony, breaks down the barriers between people, whether it's racial, whether it's gender, whether it's sexual orientation, whether it's religious. We live in a small world now. We have to learn how to live together. And this is a way to do it. Right view. And also, solving the problem with your relationships. So you don't have to keep bothering me or the other monks at all times of the day and night. Thank you very much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Excellent. So apparently that they can't get any questions from the internet tonight. So any questions from the floor or from the seats? Because not all of you are sitting on the floor. Any questions from anybody down here about what I've been speaking about this evening? Yes, thank you. Yeah. Human nature, microphone nature, is it doesn't start working when you... Yeah, go on, yeah. Okay, I'll repeat that for everyone listening on the internet. You're saying that people always want things to be perfect. They want the glass to be perfect, so if it cracks, you tend to throw it away. You think it's imperfect. And I think 2 weeks ago, I told a simile of the forest. If you go for a walk in a forest, please see if you can find a perfect tree. One which is perfectly straight with all the branches evenly spaced, with no scars or any things growing on the trunk which shouldn't be there, with all the leaves perfectly green. If you do find a tree like that, you will be in a plantation run by some government or private company, not a real forest. In real forests, all the trees are crooked, leaning over, branches hanging off, leaves all over the place. That's why they're beautiful. All trees are damaged goods. That's why they're beautiful. All people are damaged goods. And if you're a damaged good, maybe you've had some, been sexually violated when you're young, you've had some very difficult traumas in your life, then you belong to the beautiful trees in the forest. You're damaged, you're crooked. You're beautiful. That's why it's a wonderful way of looking at life. And a glass which has got a little chip here, a little chip there, it's beautiful, it's my glass. You know, sometimes people do that to me. I've got a cup and it's got a chip here, a chip there, but I've had so many lovely cups of tea with it. It's a cup, you get used to it. And somebody comes and takes it away, and says, I'll give you a new one. Oh, that was my old cup. I love that little cup. So sometimes you understand what I mean by that. So what we're doing, we're actually changing our perception of perfect. The perfect relationship is not one which lasts forever. That's artificial. You're forcing it. Maybe you're playing around to prove something to your children or whatever. A perfect relationship is a natural one. All crooked. Totally unique. There's no other couple like that in the whole world. And some of you, I don't know how you two can stay together. But it works somehow or other. Totally imperfect. Until such time, yeah, you know, that karma, that relationship has worked out. It really is time to move on. But we move on celebrating the relationship, not mourning the parting. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing to do? Just like celebrating life, not mourning the death. I know it will put a lot of lawyers out of business, divorce lawyers, but I think they hate that job. I know a few divorce lawyers, and they hate the job. They get lots of money out of it, but the trouble is they have to deal with these people in great pain. I mean, really, So enormous emotional hurt. Much worse than if you break your leg. Break your leg is a physical pain. You can give some sort of painkiller to get rid of that. But the emotional pain of a person's relationship is finished, that is really deep and very, very hard to bear. So anyway, thank you for that question. Did I answer it sort of okay? Okay, another question? Anyone going? Really weird. No one asks a question, but as soon as I ring the bell and bow, there's a whole line of people. Oh, you've got one over there. Go on.
Hi, is it working? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So if the, what about the theory that we've got like a mental, spiritual and physical body, therefore the karmas, karmic lessons that we have would be contained in all of those three bodies. I'm then passing on an organ to somebody else. So wouldn't my karmic lessons be contained in that fascia?
Okay, that's a good question, because you know, if you give an organ to someone else, is some of that karma contained in that organ? If it was, you'd be really lucky to get one of my organs. It's a really good karma. But no, years and years ago, I remember reading, it's going to take 5 minutes, this story, reading a book about heart transplants. And there was this one girl, a young woman, maybe 10, 11, 12 years of age, she had a heart transplant. And then a successful transplant, but she kept on having these nightmares. And the nightmares was of being murdered. And now, the mother, you know, kept on being woken up in the middle of the night, comforting her child. And then, you know, went to see the doctor. And so the doctor said, oh, it's just the trauma of having a heart. It's a huge operation. You know, that will disappear after a while. But the doctor was fascinated by the details. And, you know, usually you can't find out where the organ comes from. But the doctor actually contacted a person in the police force. And this was from a woman who had been murdered in such similar circumstances that the police interviewed the heart recipient, got down the details, and arrested the man who had killed the original owner of the heart. Weird, but actually it was true that the new heart actually did contain some memory which came out in nightmares, and it was of the murder of the original owner of the heart, which is why they could transplant it. And the other weird story, well, I think many of the men here would like this one. There was a guy, must have been 50 or 60, and his about 50-year-old wife had to have a heart transplant. And she got the heart which belonged, you know, to a young prostitute who was killed. Yeah, I think you've already run ahead. You know what's going to happen in this story. And once a 50-year-old wife got this, you know, young heart which used to belong to a prostitute, the husband was very, very happy because his wife was far more, in his words, frisky than she'd ever been before. So even that heart, you know, had a little bit of memory of, you know, being belonging to a prostitute before. So any of you guys, you know, your wife is just a little bit cold on you these days. Maybe you can get her a new heart. Okay, that's only it's actually it's true. This is what they said in the story, but it's interesting. But that the effect. This whole book was about the effect of people receiving the transplants. And those effects only last for a very short time, maybe a month, 6 weeks, and then they totally disappear. And then sort of the character of the recipient takes over. They have no more memories, no more sort of character traits of the person who owned the organ before. As if basically they take over. So it's interesting. It does seem to carry on a little bit of the personality of the donor, but only for a very short time. Fascinating. So, okay, you want somebody to ask. Okay, question. Did that sort of answer your question? Maybe it doesn't answer, but it actually adds some interesting ideas. Yeah. Yeah. But remember, it's always good karma to give. So the person who gives gets a huge amount of benefit. And of course, the person who receives gets an organ which can basically save their life. So it's always win-win. Never, ever lose. So this fellow wants to ask a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so so why do you use a glass when you know it's going to break? Because you can't drink water, you know, from your hand or whatever. So you've got to use a glass. You've got no choice. So you use this, but you know it's going to break, and then you can use it and enjoy it. Now you have a body which is going to break one day. So you make use of it. You know, you have joy for yourself, give joy to others, do service for this world. And then when your body breaks and it dies, the glass is cracked. Then you know that you've done your very best. So you can celebrate the life rather than mourning the cracked glass. This glass has done such good service. Thank you so much. Okay, so there we go in life. I'm going to stop now, otherwise I'm going to crack. So thank you all for listening. Now you can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha.